Welcome to the Superconscious Success Podcast, where Jen and her Superconscious Success Family co-hosts bring you valuable content each and every week on topics relating to manifestation, spirituality, and most of all, using your superconscious to manifest success in all areas of your life. Now on to today's episode.
Hey there, Superconscious Success fam. Welcome back to another chapter reading. We have only got three chapters left of Napoleon Hill's Grow Rich with Peace of Mind. I am so excited to be bringing you this particular chapter, which is the magic power of belief, because beliefs is what shapes our lives. It's what creates our future. It's what creates our reality. And therefore, by changing our limited beliefs, we can actually change our entire life. So this chapter is going to go into that in great depth for you. Make sure you listen to the other chapters because there's some great nuggets of wisdom in those. Don't forget to check out the other books and head across to the Inner Circle where you can sign up and get free access to free courses and downloads and all sorts of amazing things. And remember that I have two programs coming out very shortly. Your Spiritual Shift, if you're wanting to learn a lot more about the Course in Miracles and being able to expand your spirituality and expand your consciousness, that is an incredible program that myself and my friend Carl Gruber are putting on. We've also got a Peace and Prosperity course, our program which Christopher Salem and I are creating, which actually teaches you how you can harmonize between peace and prosperity. It is going to be incredible. But for the time being, how about we get into this chapter where we are going to be talking about the magic power of belief, and I will speak to you at the end of this chapter. So let's get to it. In the power of belief lies the supreme secret. Belief is the key to basic mind power, which turns concepts into realities. Goals can be attained in ways which seem miraculous, yet we use only natural forces available to everyone. Even physical changes in the body can be caused by deeply implanted belief. The key to having quantities of money often lies in a simple process of auto-suggestion. Concentrate on precisely what you want and you'll see signposts that point the way. The forces of human evolution now have been brought under human control, and you can control your own evolution as a better, more successful person. Anything the human mind can believe, the human mind can achieve. Please read that again slowly. Anything the human mind can believe, the human mind can achieve. If you had been presented with that statement at the beginning of this book, you might have found it a bit too much to digest all at once. By now, however, you have seen many of the patterns of success and failure, of happiness and unhappiness, of mind turmoil and peace of mind which man gives to himself. Now, when you read, anything the human mind can believe, the human mind can achieve, you know that the conception of achievement, which turns into the achievement itself, is our great human prerogative. Anything the human mind can believe, the human mind can achieve. That is the supreme secret. Truly, deeply believe you'll have great wealth and you will have it. Truly, deeply believe you'll have sound physical health and you will have it. Truly, deeply believe you'll have a mind at peace and you will have it, and all the wonders that go with it. Anything the human mind can believe, the human mind can achieve. This is a secret known in bygone times. This is a secret which governs present day accomplishment. This is a secret which will follow man to the stars. This is the secret of the ages. What do we mean by believe? Wishing won't make it so runs an old saying. This is true and helps you remember a wish is not a belief. A wish takes place, as it were, upon the surface of the mind. I wish, you may say, and follow with any wish that tickles your fancy, to have $1,000,000 drop into your lap, to be able to flap your arms and fly. A wish is not limited by natural forces. That very apparent fact, however, is not the main difference between a wish and a belief. A belief is created, as it were, in the depths of the mind. A belief becomes part of you. That is why a true deep belief can change your glandular secretions and the content of your bloodstream and work other physical changes beyond the power of medical science to explain. Again, a belief radiating its unknown wavelength from the depths of your mind to the depths of another mind accounts for a good deal of personality power and much else on which we can put only the clumsiest of labels. It is belief in a cause much stronger than a wish to stay alive, which causes people to transcend even the instinct of self-preservation. It is belief that founds religion, sustains nations, stands behind anything great that ever is achieved. A belief, I repeat, is part of you. That is why you can achieve what you believe. Moreover, when you hold a great belief, you believe all the time, just as all the time you go on living. Conscious and subconscious. As someone expressed it, the conscious mind gives us thoughts we know. You want to put on your shoes, for example, or listen to your radio, and knowing the conscious thought, you take the appropriate action. Now, there is hardly any physical reason why one should not put on his shoes or turn on his radio if he wishes to do so and has the use of his hands. But let us now suppose that there may be some reason not to turn on that radio. Suppose it is the moment at which a certain foreign broadcast may be heard, and your government, an oppressive one, has set up punishments for people who listen to that broadcast. Moreover, you know you cannot listen to that broadcast in complete safety, for you suspect there are spies in your house. Do you or do you not reach out and turn the switch that will bring in the forbidden broadcast? That will depend a great deal upon your subconscious mind. It is not in the conscious mind that we are basically fearful or brave, but down deeper. And so the subconscious will instruct the conscious, unknown to you, and in the conscious will appear the thoughts known to you. Don't do it, you'll end in prison. Or I'm going to assert my freedom to listen to what I want to hear under any circumstances. Or even a compromise such as, I'm going to see if that nosy fellow in the furnished room upstairs is at home, and if he isn't, I'll turn on the radio. Take this a step further. Suppose you say in your conscious mind, I'm going to turn on that radio at 9 p.m. no matter what. But you wish it rather than believe it, while all the time in your subconscious dwells a fear which amounts to a direction that you'll not turn on the radio. Now the subconscious mind will feed all kinds of evasions and excuses to the conscious. You'll somehow manage to come home late, or you'll rush into the house just in time and accidentally bang into the radio, knock it off the table and smash it. An honest enough accident, since you'll consciously believe it was accidental. Or you may make an appointment to do something else at the time of the broadcast, and then suddenly remember, when your subconscious allows you to remember consciously, that this is a broadcast time, and how silly of you to have committed yourself to another obligation. Do not read any implication of dishonesty into all this, nor any implication that no consideration should be stronger than one's right to turn on one's radio. Look at it broadly. See that your subconscious mind is your hidden boss. You probably have recognized this many a time when you have said there is something you simply will not do. It is against your principles. A true principle is a firm belief that is part of you and can, of course, be a very useful and necessary thing. Your subconscious mind is your hidden boss then and gives orders to your conscious. But your subconscious, as you surely know by reading this book, is a very special kind of boss. It will go into conference with you, so to speak, and consider changing any of its standing orders, cancelling them, substituting orders if need be. Decide upon the belief you want, set it firmly into your subconscious mind, and your subconscious will thereafter instruct your conscious mind to live up to that belief. Let your belief include the concept of achievement, and your subconscious mind will discover ways and means towards that achievement which, on the strength of a mere wish, would completely escape you. You may talk of good fortune and lucky breaks, but what you mean is a sharpening of all your senses towards the achievement you want, a focusing of all your forces away from other matters and towards that achievement, a mighty access of strength and resourcefulness, a tuning in upon other minds whose aid otherwise would have escaped you, and more. The best of words live when they talk of the power of belief. Only feel your belief propelling you towards the goal of your achievement, and you'll know at last that an irresistible force is at your command. Is there a limit to what belief can achieve? If there is a limit, nobody has seen that limit yet. I've mentioned often that we may at times avail ourselves of powers beyond our ordinary senses. Not supernatural, but natural powers we're only beginning to understand. Deep subconscious belief aids mightily in winning the aid of these unseen powers. Once when I was a child, I had typhoid fever, the only serious illness I ever have had. I was ill for weeks without showing any sign of improvement. At length, as my father informed me years later, I lapsed into a coma. The two doctors who had come out to our farm told my father there was nothing else they could do. My end was only a few hours away. My father walked into the forest. There he knelt down and prayed to another doctor beyond earthly doctors. With his prayer, he generated a mighty, all-embracing belief that I would recover. He remained on his knees for an hour or more, and at length a great peace came over him, that peace of mind which is the condition in which the mind works at its mighty best. And suddenly from nowhere, and yet beyond the slightest shadow of a doubt, he knew peacefully that I was going to recover. I do not know where my father's prayer might have been heard, nor if it was heard. nor if the mere fact of the prayer gave him the focusing and intensifying agent which is part of deep subconscious belief. But I know that when he returned to the house, he found me sitting up, which had been impossible for me to do a couple of hours before. Sitting up, crying for water, and with my fever broken, as we used to say. Another generation, another goal. I've been privileged to see in my own generation and with my own son how deep belief can bring impossible achievement. When my son Blair was born without ears and without many vital parts of the usual hearing equipment, I conceived the idea that he would hear. Let me make short shrift of the obstacles that were put in Blair's way and mine. The denunciations I received for not allowing him to learn finger talk, the attempts to wreck his life by making himself conscious about being different, and so forth. At any rate, I knew that the subconscious mind can work wonders towards establishing health and proper function in the body when it is so conditioned. The conscious mind often serves as a sort of sentinel which guards the entrance to the subconscious. Thus, as we say, a man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still, because his agreement was merely conscious, perhaps a peacemaker rather than a subconscious change of orders. Or in extraordinary circumstances, we are carried away and do not act in our accustomed manner, but later return to our ordinary ways of conducting ourselves because no deep down impression was made. Hypnotism appears to bypass the conscious mind at some times and with some people. There is a better and less risky way, however, to reach past the barrier of the conscious and implant instructions in the subconscious, where they'll be absorbed and fed back. That way is to give instructions to a sleeping person. The conscious mind sleeps, but the subconscious does not sleep. Recent studies suggest that there are certain stages of sleep in which the mind is more receptive than when it is in other stages, and I am glad to see this modern investigation of the technique. I may have wasted some of my efforts, but my efforts were so long continued and backed by such belief that they achieved what many others said I would never be able to do. I spoke to Blair while he slept. I spoke directly to his subconscious mind and told it what I expected of it. He received added stimulation of his nervous system through chiropractic adjustment. With this method, I induced nature to build an extra set of auditory nerves from Blair's brain to the inner walls of his skull. Now, he did not grow ears, but he achieved ability to hear equivalent to about 65% of the normal level, and with that he got along quite well. Some may call this a miracle of healing, but I would rather call it a demonstration of the power of natural forces. Just how does Blair hear? Through bone conduction to those new nerves inside his skull. Now we know that some of the marvellous new transistorized hearing aids depend on bone conduction. Can the method be extended? My method worked, but it required that some devoted person remains on duty many hours a night. Later I experimented with a phonograph, which repeated a recorded message every 15 minutes, piping it to a hearing device beneath the sleeping person's pillow. I myself have received great benefit from this device. We know too that corresponding devices are sometimes offered for sale. These devices have been benefited by modern developments in sound recording and transmission, but their principle is the same. Concurrently, I've become aware of other recent research into the techniques of sleep learner, which suggests some of the difficulties people may encounter. First of all, the machine alone is not enough. First, there must be belief that the subconscious mind can and will receive messages while the conscious is asleep. A skeptical mind may make nothing of the messages. A mind filled with fear and inferiority or both will soon decide the gadget is too much trouble to use. Then too, some people have their sleep so disturbed by the mere existence of a machine at their bedside that their conscious minds never really go out of action. Probably they could condition themselves to sleeping, machine or no machine, but I suspect that most such people are more anxious to return the machine within the time limit of its guarantee. Many people also seem to go to lengths to negate any benefit they may obtain through sleep learning. The subconsciously recorded message needs time in which to take root, so to speak, in the myriad cells of the mind. It will not do this if the conscious mind is allowed, even encouraged, to use its waking hours to throw in negative thoughts, the memory of a past failure, for instance, or over-concern with what other people will think of some course of action, or whatever. And finally, I discovered this. The recorded messages must be reinforced when the individual is in a conscious, wide-awake state. He should memorize the recorded messages, which of course have no concern with anything but what is to be achieved and carry no clutter of imagined handicaps. He should repeat these completely positive, focused messages to himself many times a day so that his conscious mind becomes accustomed to them and through repetitive conditioning can talk to his subconscious. Eventually, sleep learning may be so perfected as to open great new worlds of achievement. It may help you greatly right now, but I wish rather to mention it as an illustration of the way in which the subconscious can and will accept orders which forever after guide you, and may, as I have shown, even cause marvelous changes in the body. This book emphasizes the fact that each of us carries within himself the means of finding his own greatness. Knowing the supreme secret, what the human mind can believe the human mind can achieve, you see that you have what it takes, your mind, and you have available the only other ingredient you need, a world that is bursting with riches and throbbing with opportunity. Put the two together. The art of auto-suggestion. There is a man in Cleveland today who is worth about $10 million. He made his money first by putting TV sets into supermarkets, thus reaching shoppers with special programs he broadcast to them at the point of purchase. This did not require any new inventions nor the instilling of a new way of life into millions of people. It did not even require a head start by way of great capital or special position. For this man, his name is Art Modell, began as a shipyard worker. He conceived an idea and brought it upward and onward into achievement. A man named McVicker from Cincinnati is quoted as saying, "You have got to believe so strongly that you overcome the doubt of others." He believed that a doughy material used to clean wallpaper would appeal to children and their parents as a non-sticky modeling material. Others told him he was wrong. He achieved a business worth about $4 million a year. Like Henry Ford or Thomas Edison, these successful men of today believed and achieved. Their belief showed them the way to their achievement. So it was with Columbus. So it was with Paul of Tarsus. So it can be with you. The art of auto-suggestion is completely self-contained. We shall see it clearly in plain print in a moment. First, ask yourself, what do I want? This is not a question to be answered lightly. What do you want? Once more, I give you a list to aid your thinking. Improvement of your general health, improvement of some specific health or functional factor, cure of any bad habit, abolishment of fear, the ability to transmute sex energy, the ability to find the right mate in marriage, weight reduction or gain, the ability to break away from outworn customs or outmoded ways of life, the ability to get along better with other people, the ability to sway to your way of thinking, inner guidance in the selection of a business or profession, and of course, money. When you know what you want, you are ready to go after it. You need a definite chief aim. Vague mind conceptions are little better than mere wishes. Decide where you are going. Then and only then do you begin to see the signposts that point the way. You are going to make money, and I trust you to see it as only one form of wealth. But as I've pointed out, a form of wealth which helps us attain many others. The chances are that you automatically accept money as a goal, so let us take this goal as a prototype in illustrating auto-suggestion. How much money do you want to make? You will recall the stories of W. Clement Stone and other men who set up specific sums of money as their goal and attained the ownership of those sums. They did not fill their minds with thoughts of difficulties in their way nor the menace of competition. They believed they would make money. They achieved what they went after. Now, this is the way to use auto-suggestion to help you achieve the sum of money you want. It is done in 6 steps which stimulate your subconscious mind. 1. Find a quiet spot where you can be alone and undisturbed. Many find that as they lie in bed just before going to sleep, the mind becomes receptive. Close your eyes and repeat aloud, listening to your own words, the sum of money you intend to make, the time limit you've set for its accumulation, and a description of the service or merchandise you intend to give or sell in return for that money. 2. Put the same words in writing. You may do this first if you wish. Write it out carefully and in detail. Memorize it. When you go into your quiet place to repeat your goal to yourself, say it word for word as you have written it. You may change it here and there until it is absolutely specific. Add a statement of this nature in your own words. I believe that I will have this money in my possession. My belief is so strong that I now can see the money before my eyes. I'm holding it in my hands. I know it exists and it is awaiting transfer to me in return for my services rendered with full honesty and all possible skill and diligence. A plan exists which will transfer this sum, state the sum, to me by, state this deadline date, and my receptive mind will see that plan and cause me to follow it. See yourself rendering the service or delivering the merchandise. See yourself receiving your payment. This is important. 3. Place a written copy of your statement where you'll see it night and morning. Read it upon rising. Read it again just before retiring. You may also carry it with you and read it several times a day. But to read it first thing in the morning and last thing at night is particularly important. Again, as you read, see yourself going through the actions which will bring you the money. Feel the money in your hands. Feel with feeling. Merely reading the words or saying them to yourself will mean nothing unless they carry the emotional charge of desire. It is well known that the subconscious has less regard for reason than it does for emotion. 4. Put the mastermind principle to work. It is not always possible to form a mastermind group according to the directions you've read in a previous chapter, and you're better off without one than doing it the wrong way. You can, however, make good use of the principle by conferring with the right people. These are people who can help you, and if possible, people you can help. Don't forget, if you want to see a banker about financing your business, you are helping him run his business. And don't forget, many a cold-blooded banker has been swayed by the confidence and belief and enthusiasm he sees in a would-be borrower, with good reason. The more people you talk to, the more information you will receive. The more they know, the more you know. Choose the right people, however. Now and again, you'll meet among them one whose mind tunes into yours. Speaking with such a person is a mighty tonic for subconscious drives you have at your direction. 5. When your plan appears, act upon it. You'll know it. The subconscious is like a fertile garden spot in which any seed will grow, be it the seed of a weed or the seed of your fortune. Through auto-suggestion, you work wonders in keeping out the weed seeds. When a seed of your fortune falls in the garden of your subconscious, however, it grows in relation to the attention you give it. Do not sit idly waiting for your plan to appear. You may not precisely know, for example, where you are going to set up your business, but until the right place draws your attuned attention, you can be contacting sources of supply, learning more about the business, and filling your mind with the process of your achievement in 100 other ways. Remember how publishers came to me when I needed them. 6. Once you have a mature plan which covers every detail, put that plan in writing. Read it over night and morning. Stick to it, but be ready to change it if circumstances point out the advisability of a change. Your mind will not constantly flutter from one alternative to another. Your subconscious will sift the alternatives and a great power to show you what you must do to attain your goal. I could set down faith as the 7th factor of auto-suggestion, but faith is all-pervasive. Faith is called, in another of my books, the head chemist of the mind. As faith blends with thought, it becomes a perfect ingredient for true subconscious belief. As faith becomes part of you, it rides along with every message you repeat to yourself. It becomes part of your character, part of your personality. Faith helps you emotionalize your thoughts, brings them beyond the power of reason into another realm of mental being where thoughts become their physical equivalent. Now, with a sense of faith, read the 6 steps of auto-suggestion over again. A new look at your mind and your body. The supreme secret is anything the human mind can believe, the human mind can achieve. It would be as valid to say anything the mind can believe, the mind can achieve. But I wish to emphasize the power of the human mind. No other living creature can take hold of its mind as we do, sense and explore its powers, find ways to increase those powers to an extent almost beyond imagination. You are used to being human. Take time now and then to realize the uniqueness of your human state. One of the great modern commentators on man and his mind is Dr. Pierre Lecomte de Noy. I have a favorite passage from his great book, Human Destiny, which I am fond of showing to people who cannot see how it is possible for the mind to heal the body. I quote this passage now. The human body is constituted of distinct beings, the cells, each endowed with totally different properties. There are the common and prolific plebeians, the fibroblasts, there are the independent chemists of the liver and the marrow. There are the chemists who obey the orders transmitted by the brain and the nervous system and who know how to manufacture instantaneously at the tip of the nerves acetylcholine, which contracts the muscles, and adrenaline, which decontracts them. There are the noble cells, the pyramidal cells of the brain, living in proud sterility and never reproducing themselves. There are the nervous cells which transmit orders and reactions. There are those which defend, those that protect, those which heal. From the coordination of the whole emerges the autonomous personality of man. And this brief description barely touches upon the stupendous group of factors available to man in his body and brain for the organization, projection, and use of the power of thought. It is a major indictment against the world's educational system that most people come into this world, live their span of years, and pass on without being made aware of their thought power and the fact that their lives are made or unmade by this thought power. Worse yet, we are taught all kinds of things and yet rarely taught to use our minds for the attainment of the one indispensable form of wealth, peace of mind. It is a major indictment against the religionists that they seem to have learned so much about how to prepare to live in heaven, but have done so little about preparing us to live prosperously, peacefully, and happily here now. It is a major indictment against our civilization that the vast majority of people keep most of their thought power centered on their fears rather than on conceptions and deep beliefs which can bring them what they want, not that of which they are afraid. Every man can surpass himself. Dr. Dunoyer points out dramatically the power of the human being to reach beyond his limitations and thus forever to extend his powers. We all have our role to play individually, but we only play it well on condition of always trying to do better, of overreaching ourselves. It is this effort which constitutes our personal participation in evolution, our duty. If we have children, we will have collaborated in a measure modestly, statistically. But unless we develop our personality, we'll have left no trace in the true human evolution. Obviously, Dr. Dunoyer recognized the importance of each individual's exercising his privilege of choice in thinking as a means of mental and spiritual growth, for he continues. An intelligent being, said Bergson, carries within him the wherewithal to surpass himself. It is needful for him to know it, and it is essential for him to attempt to realize it. The incomparable gift of brain, with its truly amazing powers of abstraction, has rendered obsolete the slow and sometimes clumsy mechanisms utilized by evolution so far. Thanks to the brain alone, man, in the course of three generations only, has conquered the realm of air, while it took hundreds of thousands of years for animals to achieve the same result through the process of evolution. Thanks to the brain alone, the range of our sensory organs has been increased a millionfold, far beyond the fondest dreams. We have brought the moon within 30 miles of us. Dunoyer is a modern writer, but see how he already needs to be updated. We see the infinitely small and we see the infinitely remote. We hear the inaudible. We have dwarfed distance and killed physical time. We have enslaved the forces of the universe even before we have succeeded in understanding them thoroughly. We've put to shame the tedious and time-consuming methods of trial and error used by nature because nature has finally succeeded in producing its masterpiece in the shape of the human brain. But the great laws of evolution are still active, even though adaptation has lost its importance as far as we are concerned. We are now responsible for the progress of evolution. We are free to destroy ourselves if we misunderstand the meaning and the purpose of our victories, and we are free to forge ahead, to prolong evolution, to cooperate with God if we perceive the meaning of it all. If we realize that it can only be achieved through a wholehearted effort towards moral and spiritual development. Peace of mind and power of mind. Since what you achieve in life depends on what you first conceive, and this depends first of all upon your deep inner subconsciously founded belief, you see that your life depends upon your power to believe. No, your mere life processes do not depend upon this power. The eternal has made it possible for the supreme achievement of evolution, man, to stay alive even without knowing he's alive. The beating of the heart, the pumping of the lungs, the processes of digestion and other vital functions are taken care of by a part of the brain which takes care of itself. Beyond this, man creates an even better species. He aspires and climbs to the heights of his aspiration. Seeing heights yet beyond, again he aspires and achieves that peak beyond which lies another and another. Significantly, philosophers always have recognized the power of the quiet mind, the peaceful mind. This is far from being a mind empty of aspiration. It is rather a mind which can hold, judge, and evaluate the highest forms of aspiration. Nor is a peaceful mind the exclusive property of a person who does not move about in the world and busy himself with the world's manifold affairs, for some of the most peaceful minds are the busiest. Remember, we speak of inner peace, like a quiet center about which all else revolves, like a great rotating dynamo doing useful work and filled with energy, yet referring its rotation always to the unmoved pivot at its middle. A mind at peace is a mind that is free to conceive greatly. It bears no great conflicts within its subconscious which may hamper the conscious mind and therefore conscious action. A mind at peace is a free mind. Its power is limitless. Form your great beliefs on the basis of inward peace and they'll be truly great and they'll be possible of achievement. Not possible to everyone perhaps, but possible to the man who knows that peace of mind and power of mind are the same. Who told you it couldn't be done? What great achievement has he, to his credit, that entitles him to use the word impossible? So there we go, the magic power of belief. We know how important belief is. We know how important it is to reprogram our subconscious mind to bring that wealth and that abundance into our life. Now, if you head across to the inner circle, I am actually going to go through those incredible six steps that Napoleon Hill has mention in regards to reprogramming that subconscious mind along with the summary chapter. So all you need to do is go to superconsciousuccess.com /InnerCircle and sign up for that, and you'll find that within the membership area. So thanks so much for joining me today, and I look forward to catching you in the next chapter reading. We've only got a couple more to go, so hang in there, and I hope that you've got a lot out of it. Okay, I'll speak to you very soon. Okay, bye.